Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 FM in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 7 p.m. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Each week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in New York City. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Hello, New York. I'm Bernard Goyder. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute live on WBAI. We're a socialist radio show and podcast from members of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. DSA is the largest socialist organization in the United States with 95,000 members nationwide. And we're its biggest chapter. We're run by our 9,000 plus members and organizers who are working together to build democratic socialism in all five boroughs. Tonight, we've been talking about what we can do to stand up against apartheid in Palestine and a new bill by New York State Assembly member Zohran Mamdani. The proposed law aims to stop nonprofits funding illegal settlement activity in Palestine from benefiting from charitable status. We're thrilled to have Zohran on the show to talk about the bill. We're also excited to be joined by Sumaya Awad, Director of Strategy and Communications for the Adela Justice Project, a Palestinian-led organization that builds coalitions between press groups in the US and abroad. But first, let's hear the headlines from Caroline Van Zijs.
Hello, listeners. This is Caroline with your headlines for today, Tuesday, June 6th. In local news, before the legislative session ends this week, state lawmakers appear to be negotiating towards a housing compromise bill that could incorporate some of the affordability protections and incentives for housing construction that were omitted from the budget earlier this spring. Advocates are hopeful that the state passes the Clean Slate Act, which would seal most criminal records after a period of time, eliminating a barrier to employment and housing for many New Yorkers with criminal records. NYC DSA's three state senators have announced that they will vote against confirming Justin Driscoll, a former fossil fuel lobbyist, as CEO of the New York Power Authority, NYPA. NYPA is mandated to carry out the sweeping mandates passed in the Build Public Renewables Act earlier this year. City Council leadership and Mayor Adams appear to be facing significant conflicts over the mayor's desire to implement spending cuts in the FY24 budget deal due at the end of June. Mayor Adams joined national right-wing figures in attacking a CUNY law school graduate who made a speech critical of Israel and the NYPD at her school's commencement last month. Many of these critics are calling for defunding CUNY as punishment for allowing the speech. While Adams has not indicated his interest in doing this, he already proposed budget cuts to CUNY totaling $155 million, according to a comptroller report. The departure of Mayor Adams' chief housing officer last week highlighted an unusually high rate of turnover for senior staff in his administration during his 18 months of service. The City Department of Corrections has announced that it will stop notifying the public when an incarcerated person dies, which they claim was just an informational practice that the de Blasio administration implemented and will no longer be followed. The New York Times profiled a community policing pilot program in Brownsville, where local residents responded to 911 calls about minor conflicts without involving the NYPD. Airbnb sued the city of New York ahead of the city's plan to enforce a 2021 law that limits the platform's home shares to short-term rentals. In election news, the city and NY1 released an interactive portal that highlights all 51 city council districts across NYC and describes whether or not they have competitive races in this month's primary election. For Revolutions Per Minute, this is Caroline Van Zijs. Now back to the studio for today's show.
Thank you, Caroline. Our headlines are brought to you by The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by New York City DSA's Electoral Working Group, covering local politics and radical activism. You can subscribe at thethornnyc.substack.com. Hi, I'm Amy Wilson. My pronouns are she, her. Really excited to be here in the studio for tonight's show. And let's go ahead and start getting to know one of our guests for here in the studio tonight. Sumaya, good evening. How are you tonight?
Hi, Amy. So great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So before we dig into tonight's conversation in depth, could you introduce yourselves to our listeners? Tell us a little bit about yourself, the organization that you work with, and what brought you to your current role as an organizer and an activist?
Sure. So my name is Sumaya Awad. I'm a Palestinian, and I work with a really great organization called the Adala Justice Project, or AJP for short, as we call it. And we're a U.S.-based advocacy organization that focuses on Palestine and connecting Palestine and the struggle for freedom in Palestine to other struggles and other movements here in the U.S., really highlighting that you cannot be progressive, you cannot call yourself a leftist, and just exclude Palestine. There's no such thing as progressive except on Palestine. And that, in fact, there are so many deep-rooted connections, both symbolic and material, between the Palestinian struggle for freedom and the many movements flourishing here in the United States, from Movement for Black Lives, the Black Lives Matter movement, to climate justice, to indigenous activism and land back, to healthcare, and the list goes on and on, that there's actually an intrinsic connection between domestic policy and what we're fighting for here in the U.S. And what our government, both local and federal, are doing abroad and the implications that our actions have and that policies have on those abroad. And so that's a little bit about the work of Adala Justice Project. And I have been a Palestine activist for many, many, many years, but I think I was really politicized as a college student here in the U.S., organizing with Students for Justice in Palestine and organizing boycott, divestment, sanction campaigns on college campuses and really fighting for students who are being targeted for their Palestine activism. As was mentioned earlier in the headlines, this is ongoing. And it points to the fact that actually the movement for Palestine is growing, it's gaining ground, and so the retaliation is increasing. And I'll stop there.
Thank you. So happy to have you here in the studio with us tonight. I do believe we are waiting on another guest tonight. So Ron Mamdani, the assembly member who is carrying the Not On Our Dime bill, which is going to be the focus of our discussion tonight. And while we'd love to have Zoran able to explain the bill a little bit himself, we'll see whether the vagaries of live radio and being an active serving elected official are going to allow that to happen. So just to kind of lay the groundwork, set the stage for tonight's conversation, if you could give our audience an overview of what the Not On Our Dime bill refers to when it refers to Israeli settlements, and what is the specific issue at hand that this bill is looking to address?
Yes, definitely. Hopefully Zohran is joining momentarily. So what the bill is addressing is the fact that there are organizations based here in New York State that have the status, a charity status, right? So they're considered charities. Looks like Zohran is on. Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah. I mean, maybe let's see if Zohran can jump on. Zohran, can you hear us? You're live on WBAI.
Yes, I can hear you.
Fantastic. So So Sumaya was just giving us a bit of background about the bill, but I know you're a bit short of time and you're running into a meeting of the caucus. So perhaps you could kind of give us some insight into the background behind the bill.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to do so. I'm also, Sumaya is an authority on this subject and very much part of the reason why this bill even exists. The the story begins with a number of coalition groups approaching my office many months ago, one of which is the Adala Justice Project, AGP, where Sumaya works, as well as groups like the Center for Constitutional Rights, Jewish Voices for Peace, the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, presenting us with evidence of the fact that there are a number of charities registered in New York State that are sending more than $60 million a year to Israeli settler organizations whose actions violate the Geneva Convention. And the stakes of this is not simply from the scale of the amount of money that's being sent, and that $60 million is in and of itself quite a significant sum, but also in the fact that this money oftentimes is the bulk of the operating budget for these Israeli settler groups. And there are a number of examples that come to mind, but that is kind of a broad overview of the state of play today. And so we introduced legislation to ensure that no longer will New York State effectively subsidize war crimes. And instead, what we will do is define charitable purpose as not being applicable to charities that fund the violation of the Geneva Convention, and ensuring that our state is consistent with what is already U.S. foreign policy.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point, Sumaya, to kind of build on around the fact that there really is an international consensus that treats these settlements as illegal under international law.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, these settlements have been considered illegal international law for many years now. It's not new. And it's something that the leading human rights organizations, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, I think as Zohran mentioned, have declared these settlements illegal under national law, and actually gone even further to say that what these settlements do is they entrench apartheid. They entrench an apartheid regime that exists right now in Palestine, right, where there are roads for Jewish Israelis and there are roads for Palestinians. There are schools for Israelis, there are schools for Palestinians, et cetera. And settlements really entrench that. And so they've played a really important part in ensuring that the military occupation, Israel's military occupation of Palestine, continues. And what they've created is these enclaves of Palestinian communities, villages, and towns, encircled by all these flourishing settlements, where you have access to clean water, you have access to electricity 24/7, you're enclosed in these compounds. While Palestinians are all living on the outskirts, knowing that the land that these settlements are built on used to be their land, their homes used to be there, and they've been forced out, they've been forcibly displaced in order to make room for these settlements with settlers that many of the settlers are actually not from Palestine, right? They're coming from elsewhere. In fact, many of them are coming from here in New York. The famous example being Sheikh Jarrah in East Jerusalem, in occupied East Jerusalem, which really made it into the headlines 2 years ago, where Palestinians were being forcibly displaced from their homes to make way for settlers who were just bussed in and essentially just handed over these homes where Palestinians are living and have been living for decades, some for centuries. And the biggest example that came to be was of Mohammed Al-Kurd, a young Palestinian activist who showcased what was happening to his home, his family's home in occupied East Jerusalem, where a settler from Brooklyn was coming in to live in his home. And the Israeli state was saying, yes, this is now your home. And so these are this is what we're talking about when we say the violence of settlements and of settlers. It's not just when they go and burn down olive groves and they burn down Palestinian homes and cars. That's, of course, incredibly violent. But there's also the daily violence of just existing on a land that is not yours and existing on a land that you only have a right to because Palestinians were displaced, because Palestinians were forced out. And all of this has been officially declared a war crime, that these settlements are actually a war crime under international law and under the Geneva Convention. They're considered a war crime. So what this bill is saying is, why are we subsidizing war crimes? How is that part of what we should stand for as New Yorkers and what our state should stand for and what our values are?
Thank you, Sumaya. Just want to remind our listeners that they are listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. As you heard Reggie say at the top of the hour, we are always fundraising, still in need of support from our listening community. So please consider donating to the station. You can go to WBAI.org to see the details for how to do that. We will be opening the phones a bit early tonight to hear from you on this very important topic. So if you'd like to call in later, please take down the number 212-209-2877. Just to respond briefly to your comments, Maya, I saw an article recently that said that there are record numbers of South Africans settling in Israel, which really puts, I think, maybe a little too fine a point on the apartheid nature of these settlements, as you referred to there. And I'd love to now turn back to Zohran, who is, again, carrying this Not on Our Dime bill in the New York State Assembly, to hear a little bit about why exactly there is such a strong connection between these New York-based organizations and the Israeli settlements, and why is New York even involved in, as a state, in this international activity at all, if you can lay out that background for us a bit.
Yeah, you know, I think that there some of the answers to that question have to do with the fact that New York City is very much a global city and is also a finance capital of the world in many ways. And so when money is being moved around from place to place, it oftentimes we see that the institutions that facilitate that movement are registered here in our state. I think the other part of that answer is that there is also a unique relationship between the politics of this state and the state of Israel, and just how much primacy has been given to the state of Israel. And you can see that in the fact that there were a period of years where former Governor Cuomo went to Israel more than he rode the subway. The fact that there are annual trips that are coordinated for different branches of local government here in New York City and New York State for elected officials to go and visit Israel, coordinated by groups that are very explicit in the fact that their mission statement is to cultivate additional support for Israel. The state of Israel has a unique, very unique role in the way that our politics function here. And I think that what we see is this is making very clear to New Yorkers that our complicity in the violation of Palestinian human rights is not simply by virtue of being Americans, but also by virtue of being New Yorkers. Because you have these organizations that are chartered here in New York State, that our state has given the privilege of being tax exempt, that are using and abusing that status to finance the expulsion of Palestinians from their homes, the setting of agricultural land on fire, the demolition of schools. It is clear to any person outside of politics that these actions do not fit any reasonable definition of a, quote, charitable purpose.
Thanks, Zohran. It's been quite the reaction from your colleagues in the New York State Legislature, this bill. 66 of them have said that this is have opposed the bill and said it's attacking charities. You've been accused of removing money from organizations that are providing emergency medical care for victims of terrorism, and even taking the clothes off the backs of orphans. How do you respond to those criticisms that these are legitimate charities doing legitimate charitable activity?
What those criticisms rely on is the fact that with a number of these charities that are registered here in New York State, they are not exclusively funding Israeli settler organizations. Some of them are spending 60 to 70% of their funding. You know, some of them are spending 80 to 90. There may be, you know, 10% of that funding that is going towards what we would broadly understand as charitable activities. But the fact of the matter is that if you find an institution that is subsidizing war crimes, it does not matter what that institution also subsidizes. There cannot be an acceptance of these kinds of actions and activities, which are, you know, in the very literal terms, war crimes, as being acceptable simply because they come with funding for activities that we would deem permissible. We have to have a zero tolerance policy when it comes to our state subsidizing these kinds of acts.
Do you think there's a bit more receptiveness to kind of to oppose these settler organizations, given the political situation in Israel at the moment with this very, very right-wing government that's been described as fascist? Parts of it are the very settlers that have been removing Palestinians from their land for decades are now ministers in this government.
You know, I think that there's a growing appetite amongst New Yorkers to see some kind of accountability for these blatant violations of international law, as well as for the policies that exist within Israel, though that is not what this legislation seeks to address. However, the blowback from a number of my colleagues, from, you know, the fact that there are 66 of my colleagues who signed this letter in opposition, speaks to how our politics is disconnected from our realities. And our politics is also disconnected from the attitudes and the beliefs of our constituents. And you can see that in time after time, when you poll Americans about settlements, and specifically American Jews about settlements, there is not this uniform opposition that has been presented by my colleagues. And I think it's also been an attempt time and again, a very disingenuous one at that, to mischaracterize this legislation, because there is an understanding that settlements in and of themselves cannot be defended. So we must say that this legislation is about something else entirely, or that the motivations of this legislation have nothing to do with human rights. That is how I understand much of the pushback.
So, Maya, I'm going to bring you on this. What's your perspective in terms of the links between the current government of Israel and these organizations in New York?
Yeah, I mean, just to first reiterate something that Zlatan said, something you said actually, Bernard, which is that, you know, there is this incredibly right-wing fascist government in Israel. And in some ways, it's Israel has always had a right-wing government. When you're a settler colonial state, that is the nature of your government. But that what we're seeing now is a much more public, proud, right-wing government in Israel that is, you know, before they were really worried about their image and would sort of use liberal rhetoric and their publicity was about viewing Israel as part of a progressive terrain. And now it's just openly right-wing, openly fascist, aligning itself with some of the most really abhorrent, you know, leaders around the world, from Jair Bolsonaro in Brazil to Trump a couple years ago to Viktor Orban, etc., and doing so like really unabashedly. But I really want to say something that Zohran said. I wanted to emphasize it, which is that a lot of the data that it seems like these 66 members that opposed the bill, the data they're looking at seems to be very old, like from 10 or 20 years ago, that they think that people are not increasingly supportive of Palestine and increasingly critical of Israel and the settlements in particular. Numerous polls have come out just in the last 2 years that really highlight that actually Americans are moving on this and moving quickly and moving left quickly, that increasingly they're critical of Israel, they're against settlements, they're supportive of Palestinians in their struggle. And there are polls that have showed that Democrats are moving on this very quickly, polls that have showed that, you know, between the ages of like 20 and 40, people are moving on this. And so the tide is turning and turning pretty rapidly, I would say, in the last 3 years. And I think these politicians need to look at that data. They need to pull it up. They need to find it. Their staffers need to do that and show it to them, because it's there. The polls are there, and the polls are telling the truth. They're telling something that's very important that we shouldn't ignore. And I think it's really important to highlight that not on our dime, this act is the first time a bill is introduced in New York, or any state as far as we know, that doesn't target Palestinians, but instead actually uplifts their cause. And that's huge, that's historic, that's momentous. And it's not a coincidence that it's happening right now. It's happening in response to what constituents in New York have been calling for across New York City and across New York State. Constituents are there saying, why are we subsidizing settlements? Why are we as New York State, why are we supporting these war crimes that are happening? And that's what Zohran and Jabari and others who have endorsed this bill are responding to. They're responding to their constituents. They're responding to New Yorkers.
Yeah. So Zohran, do you kind of want to add to that? I know you've got to run off in a couple of minutes, but you know, what's your perspective on the coalition that you've built with Jewish comrades and with comrades kind of from different parts of the movement on this issue?
It's indicative of the constituency that is forming across New York City and New York State politics, a constituency that has an appetite for seeing consistency in our rhetoric and in the reality that is in front of them. Because we speak oftentimes about human rights, and we speak about dignity and justice, but as any participant or follower of American politics knows, so often those ideals seem to have an exception, and that exception is Palestine. You know, growing up in this country and becoming politically active, I was very familiar with the term PEP, Progressive Except Palestine. And what is so beautiful about this larger coalition is that it showcases that there is a broad-based movement that is waiting in the wings to become a strong and forceful part of our city and state politics. And it is a movement that demands we see Palestinians as deserving of human rights as any other person in this world would be, and as Palestinians being deserving of equality under the law, and ensuring that we do not turn a blind eye when there are such blatant violations of our state law and the intention of our law just because it happens to be applying to Palestinians.
You are listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. We'll actually be taking calls from listeners later in the show. So if you want to take down the number now, it's 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Zohran Mamdani, thank you so much for coming on the show. And we really appreciate giving us a chance to kind of scrutinize this legislation and talk about it and learn about it. And yeah, really, really best of luck with the final sessions of the Legislative Canada and yeah, solidarity.
Thank you so much, solidarity. And you are in much better hands with Sumaya on the show.
Thank you very much. So yeah, we'll in the second. So today we're talking about Palestine. We're talking about apartheid in Palestine, and we're talking about the role that New York organizations are playing in oppressing Palestinians on a daily basis by removing them from their homes and their land and importing Jewish settlers. So Sumaya, do you want to talk a bit more about the Adala Justice Foundation and organization and the work that you've been doing in terms of building coalitions and linkages with oppressed groups here in the United States?
Yeah, sure. So like I mentioned earlier, Adala Justice Project, a lot of our work is about building on and highlighting the connections between the Palestinian struggle and other movement struggles here in the U.S. And that's taking many different forms in our work. I can mention one of the more recent ones, which was with Movement for Black Lives, where we worked together to pressure Ben and Jerry's, the ice cream, the corporation behind Ben and Jerry's, to pull out of Israel. So to stop selling their ice cream in Israel, producing their ice cream in settlements, illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank. And this took many, many years and involved a lot of work from various organizations who have been at this for over a decade. And it all came to a head around 2 years ago when Ben and Jerry's wanted to partner with Movement for Black Lives. This was in the aftermath of the 2020 Black Lives Matter protests that spread across the U.S. And Movement for Black Lives responded saying, you know, Ben and Jerry's is selling their ice cream in the occupied West Bank. We have taken a firm stance in support of Palestinian rights and uplifting the boycott, divest, and sanctions movement. And, you know, we will not collaborate until Ben and Jerry's also takes a stance on a stand on Palestine. long story short, they did. In the end, Ben and Jerry's refused, stopped selling their ice cream in settlements in the occupied West Bank. So I think that's just one example of what it means to build. It's more than solidarity, because solidarity, I think, assumes that you're each coming from a very different place and meeting in the middle. And instead, I think what we're trying to show through our work and our campaigns and our organizing is we're actually all of these struggles are connected at the roots. And that's why you can't support Movement for Black Lives but not support Palestine, just like you can't support Palestinian struggle and not support Black Lives Matter, et cetera. Another example that, that I think really highlights this is some of the legislation that's come out against Palestine activists in different states across the country, attacking those who support Palestine activism or those who engage in it. And that same type of legislation, that same tactic of targeting those who boycott Israel is now being used to target fossil fuel divestment activists. The same language is being used in the bills being proposed to target fossil fuel divestment actions as that was proposed to target Palestine activists. And so there's a lot more. One of the big things right now that we're doing is working with climate activists around this. And so those are two examples.
So regular listeners of Revolutions Per Minute know that I'm a labor nerd and a huge unionist, and I do just want to give a shout out to Ben and Jerry's, the brand that you mentioned there in your anecdote. I don't have a lot of faith in national brands and national corporations, and I think the ethics of them are kind of sketchy to start out with. But I do just want to say shout out to Ben and Jerry's for voluntarily recognizing their first Ben and Jerry's shop that tried to unionize. This happened just a couple weeks ago. So shout out to Scoopers United and for Ben and Jerry's for doing the right thing with regard to Palestine. Sumaya, as organizers here on Revolutions Per Minute, we're really always interested in social movements, as you said, and how they link with each other. So I really do appreciate that you brought that up in your comments, the issues of free speech, of what is considered to be terrorism or domestic terrorism are really live for everybody on the left. And just to throw out another contemporary struggle that's been much in the news recently, if we're looking at Atlanta, Georgia, and the movement to stop Cop City in Atlanta, Georgia, protesters were hit with very heavy domestic terrorism charges for doing things that are pretty normalized here on the United States left. Here in New York City, protesters for Jordan Neely were also hit with domestic terrorism charges. And of course, as we saw and we heard in the headlines tonight, we have the very own Fatima Musa Mohammed, who gave a pro-Palestine speech at her graduation and has received a lot of backlash for that as well. So all of these issues of, who is allowed to speak on what and what type of punishment will be meted out for that or what type of support will be received from the community are something that's of interest to organizers across the left spectrum. So turning to the issue of Ms. Mohammed, do you have any further comment on that? And what regular New Yorkers or CUNY alumni, as there are so many in this city, can do in solidarity with her?
Thanks, Amy. Yeah, definitely. I think showing as much support for what activists like Fatima face for speaking out about Palestine is really, really important. There's actually a few actions that people are taking here in New York State to support Fatima and to really highlight that the attacks on her and the activism that she represents, the Palestine activism she represents, the attacks are really rooted in so much Islamophobia and racism. And I think it's really important for us to highlight that when we're talking about these attacks, that part of supporting her is also showing where these attacks are coming from and what they mean. So if you're a CUNY alum, there is a letter, a petition going around that we're asking CUNY alums to sign to show their support for Fatima and to ensure that there isn't any sort of retaliation against her by CUNY. There's also a letter organized by faculty in support of Fatima And I know that current students also have a number of actions and support as well. All of this can be found online. I want to say it's called QDSJP. I will get the exact link to share. But there are definitely a lot of petitions and ways to support through that. And then, of course, I think what's really key is building and supporting local Palestine activists, you know, at your workplace, on your campus, etc. Whether you're a student or an alum or a professor, or in your workplace, there's especially here in New York, there's often activism happening around this, and just showing your support to those activists makes a huge difference. I would also say, I don't know if Zohran mentioned this, but one really important way to uplift our campaign, not on our dime, is to take action through our website. So if you go to notonourdime.com, if you're in New York, you can contact your state representative in the assembly and send them an email urging them to support the bill. There's an action tool set up. You just put in your zip code and it will tell you who your rep is. There's a draft email ready to go. You just put in your info and it's sent directly to your rep. So definitely do that and urge your coworkers to do that, family members to do that, friends in New York. Share widely, because I think this makes a big difference and it's one of the big asks right now of the campaign.
Wonderful. Yeah, we're always looking for ways that people can plug in, get involved, take action on these incredibly important issues. So thank you for sharing that information. And speaking of getting involved, we are going to go ahead and open our phone lines now to the WBAI listening audience. The number here in the studio is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. We are live in the studio with Sumaya, who is a New York City DSA member, organizer, and activist. We're discussing the Not On Our Dime Act, which is a really important, crucial step forward for the cause of Palestinian liberation locally here in New York City, New York State. So we're eager to hear any questions, comments, words of support that our listening audience might have tonight. Once again, the number is 212-209-2877. And while we wait for any calls to come in, Sumaya, I'm curious, you know, could you tell us a little bit about the organizing that led up to this moment? And how many years or months has this been in the works? And really on a nitty-gritty level, right, because we're organizers ourselves, talk to us about how such a broad-based coalition actually came together to put this act forward.
Yeah, sure. So right now there are about 15 organizations, 15 plus, the number is just going up each week, that have endorsed this this campaign, and there's a core group of organizations that have put it together. Organizing around settlements and settlement funding has been an ongoing initiative in New York for many, many years, like over a decade, I would say, for sure, where there's been, campaigns and rallies to defund these settlement organizations, to defund settlements, to boycott settlement products, et cetera. This particular campaign came about around, I would say, 2 to 3 years ago, when different people in New York came together in the aftermath of what happened in Sheikh Jarrah and the attack on Gaza in 2021, and said, okay, there are these big settlement organizations in New York, some of the biggest ones, including Central Fund for Israel, for example, and they are sending tens of millions of dollars to settlements, illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank every year. They are helping reproduce these settlements. They are entrenching apartheid. And they're happening here in our state. What can we do about it? And that's where the campaign began. And from the very beginning, the groups that Zohran listed, Adala Justice Project, Center for Constitutional Rights, U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, Palestinian Youth Movement, all of these groups were core from the very beginning. And we now have Movement for Black Lives as well as Sunrise New York in there as well, for the reasons I mentioned earlier, because they understand that you can't fight for climate justice without fighting for Palestine, and vice versa. And all our groups came together and, you know, thought about what is it that we can do. And we're at a point right now in New York where we have these incredible electeds in the state assembly, as well as on city council, who support Palestine, who unabashedly and very proudly support Palestine. And so we approached Zohran Mamdani and Jabari Brisport, and we said, you know, here's this campaign that we have going on. Here are some ideas that we have. What can we do? And that's how the bill came about. You know, it was in response to this group of New Yorkers saying we need to do something about how our state is complicit in these illegal settlements, these war crimes. And, you know, because we have these DSA electeds who support Palestine, we were able to get this bill to be introduced. And, you know, I think 5 years ago, this would have seemed like a fantasy, like this would have seemed impossible, especially because just 5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, Andrew Cuomo introduced, there was a bill introduced that targeted those who engaged in Palestine activism in New York, right? It was the boycott bill, that New York State would boycott those who boycotted Israel, those who were involved in Palestine activism. And there was a blacklist of Palestine activists and organizations, and a pledge from New York State that they would defund any organizations and institutions that were engaged or supportive of, and of course they define this very vaguely, of Palestine activism and criticism of Israel. And so the fact that this bill is now introduced in the same state where Andrew Cuomo introduced his boycott bill 6 years ago is pretty incredible. I think it shows just how far we've come and how much people are moving on the issue of Palestine. And also, I think it's really exciting when you think about what's to come. And that's why it's really important that people support this bill, that people urge their representatives to support this bill, using our action tool, but also just getting out and talking to people about it, talk to your coworkers about it, talk about it at your school if you're a student or you're a teacher. It's really key that we keep the momentum up for this bill. And we see how far we can push it. I think the fact that we're now discussing Israeli settlements in New York is huge. And it's a sign of what's to come.
Thank you, Sumaya. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute, where we're talking about Palestine, where 5 million Palestinians live in state of apartheid across the occupied territories and in Gaza, which is effectively the world's largest prison. We have around 20 minutes left on the show. So again, if you want to add your own comments, please do give us a call on 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Also, if you'd like to donate to WBAI, please do give us a call on 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Your support is crucial to keeping this station going. So yes, Sumaya, it would be great to get your perspective on something. We're in the this week's actually the 56th anniversary of the Six-Day War, when East Jerusalem was captured by Israel, and large parts of the Sinai were captured, and really, I mean, it's for Palestinians in the diaspora in Lebanon and in Jordan, really that this is kind of the last generation alive that has that connection. So from a kind of the diaspora point of view, how important is it that we keep kind of working for justice for Palestinians and even the right to return?
Yeah, thanks, Bernard. I mean, I think the right to return is such a core tenet of any, you know, any organizing for Palestine, because one, it's a right that's enshrined under the Geneva Convention, right, in international law, that refugees, any refugee, has a right to return to their land. And that's a right that Israel has not upheld for Palestinians. Palestinians are one of the largest, if not the largest, refugee population in the world today. And, you know, there are millions of Palestinians that are unable to return to their land that have not been back or whose parents were forced out and were not unable to return, or grandparents. In my case, it was my grandfather who was forced out of Jerusalem, actually, in 1948, forced out to Beirut, and was not able to return to his home. And his home still stands. It's in West Jerusalem, actually. And it's still there, standing. And he hasn't been able to return, and neither have his family members, myself included. And this is not a unique story. This is the story of millions of Palestinians. And this is actually part of why Israel is so keen on entrenching its settlement enterprise and building more settlements, even though it's promised time and again that it will stop building settlements. Perhaps the most famous example is in the Oslo Peace Accords, the so-called Oslo Peace Accords, where one of the promises was that Israel would reduce its settlement construction or stop it entirely, and instead settlement construction almost doubled during these so-called peace years. And that's because the settlements are Israel's way, it's Israel's tool of ensuring that the right of return does not happen. That in fact, Israel only expands its control and its rule over Palestinian land. And that's like a core tenet of Zionism, right? That Zionism is about building this Jewish-only state between the river and the sea. And that's what the settlements are trying to accomplish, and why they haven't been dismantled, and why they haven't ceased constructing them or slowed down even. And in fact, it's just ramping up regardless of who is in power in the U.S., successive U.S. administrations, of course, continue to support settlement construction, et cetera.
Let's jump to the callers. Caller, you're live on WBAI.
Yeah, hello. Hello, hello. Can you hear me?
Hey, yeah, we can. You're live on the radio. What's your name and where do you come from?
Yeah. I'm John, calling from the Bronx.
Great. What's your perspective on this, John?
Yeah, you see, what has happened is that the Jewish people, they have learned, you know, how to play this game of manipulation. They've got the politicians handcuffed by guilt because, you know, they know that they could have done more for them during the Holocaust. You know, they took their time, and, you know, some ships were coming here with people who were trying to, you know, seek asylum, and they turned them away. So they used that against them, and they've learned how to weaponize their suffering. Also, you know, they got the politicians scared as hell. And if they say anything or if they do anything that's even remotely close to criticizing what the Israeli government is doing, they know that they'll either be primaried or maybe something worse. You know, they're not above killing politicians if the need comes to.
John, I'm going to go ahead and cut you off. We have a couple minutes left only in the show. And I'd love to give you a brief response before we move to the next caller. First of all, I think it is really important to separate, as we have been careful to do throughout this entire show, Zionism and Judaism. I'm an anti-Zionist Jew, and there are many of us out there in the world, perhaps some fellow anti-Zionist Jews in the listening audience tonight. And in fact, there are more Christian supporters of Israel than there are Jews in the world existing. So when we talk about Zionism and Israel, I think it's really important to remember that it's not just an issue of Judaism as a religion or an ethnicity. It's also about political power, and that political power extends to a lot of people who are not Jewish at all. So, you know, one thing that our Palestinian comrades and those who are fighting for Palestinian liberation have to deal with on a daily basis in their work is accusations of anti-Semitism. And I do feel that comments like what you just made aren't respectful to that reality, and aren't respectful to the reality that we're talking about, which is, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of people living under apartheid. And I do believe that we can separate that from statements like, oh, Jewish people have learned how to use their guilt, et cetera, et cetera. I do also think that, you know, it's fair to say that the Holocaust is a huge part of this conversation, that 20th century history is a big part of what allowed Zionism to flourish, but also that discrimination on the basis of religion and ethnicity is also what is happening in occupied Palestine right now. So I think anti-Zionist Jews like myself have a lot of work to do in terms of, again, separating out these topics and not falling into some of the same human traps that lead power to accumulate in the wrong places and that lead people to be oppressed and suffer. And this is a project of collective liberation. Sumaya, do you have anything that you'd like to add to or comment on from that?
Yeah, I'll just add that, you know, what Israel is doing and its project, it's doing it under, you know, in the name of a religion, but it's actually Zionism, like Amy said. And I think it's really important that we differentiate the two. And what this bill is doing, what this law is doing, is it's saying what we're targeting is those who are aiding and abetting war crimes. And that is the Israeli state and its supporters and Zionism. But like Amy said, some of the core groups involved in this bill and in this coalition are anti-Zionist Jews. Yeah, that's all I'll say.
Yeah, let's. If the other caller's there, we're very happy to hear what you have to say. But if not, we'll keep going with the show. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI 99.5 FM. And you're here with...
Hello?
Hi there.
Yes, calling from New Jersey.
Oh, fantastic. What's your perspective on this one?
My perspective is that the U.S. is supplying all kind of unlimited resources, military resources, and monies and everything else to the Ukraine in support of their independence. It's also supplying Israel with all kind of military resources. I find this to be a contradiction when the Palestinians are trying to gain their independence and they're not. And Israel is trying to manipulate the U.S. into attacking Iran for a number of years. So there's so much craziness going on in the world today. You don't know, you know, what to believe.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. And yeah, there's a whole global element of this conversation around US imperialism that we're going to have to save for the next time we have Sumaya on the show, perhaps with some comrades from the International Committee of the DSA. But yeah, let's wrap up the show. You've been listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in NYC, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcasting app. To connect with us after the show, you can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com, or you can find us on our website, which is revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com, or at our Twitter, which is at NYCRPM. Thanks for, and Sumaya, yeah, thanks so much for being on the show. Shukran jazeeran, like we really, really appreciate having you on, and, you know, great to get your perspective.
Thanks so much, Bernard and Amy. And all those listening, great to be here.
Thank you.